Wall Street Unplugged looks beyond the regular headlines heard on mainstream financial media to bring you unscripted interviews and breaking commentary direct from Wall Street, right to you on Main Street.
How's it going out there? It's Wednesday, September 13th, and I'm Frank Kersey, host of the Wall Street Unplugged podcast, where I break down the headlines and tell you what's really moving these markets. I want to start off by saying thanks so much for emails and the support. A lot of you wrote in to make sure I was okay. The hurricanes, they were bad. Also, lots of tornadoes close by. I live on Amelia Island, which is on the east coast, on the water, as close to Georgia as you could possibly go. We were very lucky in terms of the eye not hitting us, right? Pushing more west. And it kept shifting more and more west, but we still got nailed pretty hard. Still have no electricity, at least on Amelia Island, the parts on Amelia Island where I live. It's been a couple days now. So I do have another house about 5 miles out. That's the one I talked to you about, the one I purchased for my mom. And basically moved all my equipment here. I threw it in my car since this part of town does have electricity, luckily, which is off the island. And it's where I'm taping right now, just for you. The things I do for you, unbelievable. Can't believe it. But, you know, again, so much thanks for all the emails that I got. My family's safe. The house is okay. And we did stay at our house, which is a good thing because most Floridians, including myself, can't believe I just called myself a Floridian there. I had to pause for a minute. But anyway, I guess now I'm considering that group. But most of us, when we saw the hurricane coming a week ago, yeah, we all booked hotels. And what do? You book West Florida, mostly Tallahassee, Destin, and some people even booked North in Georgia, Northwest. And it turns out as the hurricane pushed more west, there's people that actually drove there 3-4 days before the hurricane hit, got hit harder than if they would have stayed at least by my area because it didn't hit the East Coast so hard. So, you know, it was pretty crazy. Again, millions of people who booked hotels based on the early projections of those hurricanes. And it's a shame that some of those places got hit hard. But you know, most of my friends and people on the East Coast are doing okay. And again, I don't even have access to too much information in terms of what the whole state of Florida is doing. We didn't have access to news, which is kind of pretty cool sometimes when you have access to nothing because the cell phone service didn't really work either. So it's difficult to call people, no electricity. And you're just off the grid for a couple of days. But when you come back, you got thousands of emails and stuff, and it's pretty crazy. It's back to work. But sometimes it's cool to be, you know, just with your family hanging out for a couple of days with no distractions. But other than that huge, massive hurricane, it's a distraction. But again, family safe, house is okay. Tons of debris everywhere. And it's actually pretty cool, right? Everyone just puts their differences aside, whether it's politics, race, whatever it is. And everyone just helps each other out during these extreme situations, you know, just helping out your neighbors, helping out people, moving trees. You know, everybody understands the situation. And that's why I appreciate all the emails so much and the hundreds of texts from close friends who are watching Fox News and CNN, which was kind of awesome because I did get a chance to I don't watch it often, but, you know, they cover hurricanes much more differently on the major networks compared to the local ones. So I was put on Hannity, which I rarely watch. I watch it for like 15 minutes, and right off the bat, he's like, there's a nuclear hurricane headed towards Florida, and how this, you know, type of category hurricane, you know, whatever, was 5 at the time, which is the strongest in history, is going to barrel through Florida, which has 2 major nuclear plants. I love the freaking media. It's awesome. But for those of you keeping score, a massive tsunami caused that incredible earthquake and crushed the Fukushima nuclear plant in Japan, which he was kind of referencing. So that forced it to leak radiation, so it wasn't a hurricane. But hey, nuclear hurricane sounds much better, so I get it. So good job, Hannity. CNN, same thing, crazy headlines. You know, most of the areas were okay. Of course, they're sitting in areas where the house fell down and, you know, unfortunately, it's showing you the worst-case scenario. And some places did get hit hard, but a lot of us really got lucky that it did push west, and it was still a pretty big hurricane. But, yeah, hey, whatever works for those major networks is pretty cool. So now that all is okay, it's back to, you know, business. And for subscribers, that Kersey Research Advisory, I got to be publishing my next issue on Friday. It's due this Wednesday. So it's going to be make great issue. You know, I wrote a lot of it. Now I'm getting back into it now that I've actually set up my mom's house, which is cool, at a place I can do business because, again, we still have no electricity. But a really good idea, an idea that maybe older subscribers for 3 years or older might be familiar with, but it's just a great play on one of the biggest crises in America, if not the biggest crisis in America. So be sure to check your emails on Friday. I do apologize for that delay. I'm hoping that you guys can understand. Now, I do have an awesome interview for you with Amir Adnani, who is the chairman and founder of Gold Mining, which is formerly Brazil Resources. A lot of you familiar. He's been on the podcast numerous times. He's doing this interview from the Rodman and Renshaw conference. That's in New York City, where he's speaking twice and has meetings set up the whole entire day. So he's speaking for gold mining. He's also for Uranium Energy, was the founder of Uranium Energy and the CEO of Uranium Energy, sorry, and on board of directors, which is one of the few American uranium producing companies, right? So producing companies in America. And Amir's going to break down the fundamentals of gold mining, show you why the stock has incredible upside once a cyclical bear market in gold, at least in gold stocks, right? We've seen gold prices go high here, but once this comes to an end, the gold mining is positioned to be acquired by a major gold company because they have 19 million ounces of gold in their portfolio, and it's being valued like $8 per ounce in the ground, which is insane. You only see things like this happen during extreme times. And again, it is extreme times. We're seeing gold prices rise. We're not really seeing that follow through, especially from the juniors these stocks going higher. They're still trading lower. They're still kind of out of favor, but it's not going to have too much longer, especially if gold prices keep going higher. So Amir's also going to talk about Uranium Energy, since they had significant news on the stock today, really good news. And he's also going to talk about the state of the uranium market, which includes the upside in probably the most depressed sector I ever saw. I'm being serious here. I'm talking about a sector that hasn't been disrupted like coal or something like that. But uranium is a real industry. People use uranium power. Nuclear, uranium, power. 8 years since Fukushima, it's been absolutely horrible. But he's going to talk about the upside, which could be incredible, without taking on too much risk, since you don't see prices going much lower than they are today, which is a 13-year low. They already can't produce. They can't produce even if prices jump 50% from here, from these levels, which is incredible. So you're going to see prices go higher, and his company is definitely well-positioned, as well as a lot of others that I brought on. And we've seen gains in those stocks. But when you talk to him and he talks about the statistics, you're going to see how much those gains could actually be 3, 4, 5 years down the line. So really great interview coming up. In my educational segment, it's going to be a quick one. So I'm a little busy these days cleaning trees off my roof. And also the logistics of me doing this podcast due to that hurricane are kind of challenging. And again, I'm taping this from a new place where I actually packed up my computers, my mic, my equalizers, all this stuff, going to another house and doing this podcast, which is pretty cool. That's how much I love you guys. And I appreciate it again. I want to say it again. And I'm going to say it again and again. I really appreciate all the emails and all your concerns. But a great educational segment coming up. It's going to be really cool. I'm going to break down what I'm seeing in the market and the one strategy that's worked wonders for me over the past few months, including one where we generated 180% on one stock in a couple of weeks in one of my newsletters. So I'm going to break that down in a minute. But first, let's get to my interview. My longtime friend, Amir Adnani. Amir Adnani, thanks so much for joining us again on the podcast.
It's great to be back for these quarterly report cards that I keep coming back and giving you and your listeners, Frank.
I know. I'm glad we were able to keep it on schedule with the hurricane and everything. So it's been a little wild on my side, but I'm glad not only is it difficult for me to get this podcast up, which I had to take my whole entire setup and move it someplace else because we still don't have electricity, but you are in the middle of a pretty cool conference where you speak in a couple times. I think it's the Rodman and Renshaw conference in New York City, which you're talking from your hotel right now and giving me which is fantastic. So it's a pretty amazing we're making this happen right now, right?
Well, I think the amazing part is really on your end. I mean, for me to be at a conference and at a hotel, it's all pretty straightforward, and it's a bit of a hectic schedule. But I have to say, last night when I messaged you to see if we were still doing this interview, considering you've been without power for a couple of days and all the challenges that you've been dealing with down in Florida, I was really inspired by your commitment when you wrote and said, "Nope, we have an episode of the podcast coming up, and I got to record you." So, as someone who listens to your podcast as well, Frank, I appreciate how committed and dedicated you are to delivering the goods on a weekly basis, man. That's very, very impressive.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. Thanks. And I know you were checking in on me and texting me, making sure I got tons of texts from everybody out there, which I really appreciate. Now, we've got a bunch of new listeners, and you've been a regular on this podcast for, I want to say, for 3 years. And why don't you talk a little bit, just so we get everyone involved, for even new listeners maybe hearing you for the first time, a little bit about gold mining, and talk more about the company, the history of it. You know, have you, what is it, 19 million ounce of gold now? It's incredible how many acquisitions you made. But why don't you go into it really quick, this way we get everyone on the same page here.
Sure. As an entrepreneur in the mining and natural resources business, one thing that I've always been very fascinated with as a way of building a business and as a way of creating value is the counter it is the cyclical nature of the mining business and how by being counter-cyclical, you can really create value. And this is something that I saw firsthand decades ago when I was looking at other companies being formed when I was just getting started in my own career, and I was looking at companies that were buying assets, buying mining projects at the bottom of the cycle, right? Being greedy when everyone else was being fearful type of thing. And Frank, that always resonated with me. I always thought, you know, this is such an intuitive part of the mining business. And the mining business is one of the oldest businesses in the world. You know, I mean, probably as old as it gets, because we always need metals, and we've been digging these things out of the ground for centuries. And so you can always count on that cyclicality. You look at just the 20-year chart of the TSX Venture Exchange, which is Canada's kind of resource company-dominated exchange. And again, you see the same kind of cyclicality. So in 2011, when we launched gold mining, and at the time we launched the company under a different name, Brazil Resources, mainly because we wanted to be fully focused on Brazil. We teamed up with the oldest merchant bank investment house in Brazil, Brazil Invest, which to this day are a strategic partner of ours 7 years later. And as we saw the market from 2012 and 13 start to get softer and weaker and go into really a bear market for resources, we decided to become very aggressive in making acquisitions at the bottom of the cycle. And so when you look at the last six acquisitions that we've made between 2013 and this year, we've spent over $60 million, 6-0, in making five acquisitions for stock only. And the same companies, Frank, that we acquired for $62 million had peak market cap, so their market cap in the last 5 years before the downturn, of over $800 million. Their NAV would have been over $1.2 billion. Same companies, same projects. Nothing's changed other than the commodity price. The commodity price for a case of, let's say, gold at the time of the peak market caps would have been $1,500 per ounce of gold. When we made these acquisitions, on average, the gold price was closer to $1,100 or $1,200. And you look at that, you look at the fact that for a couple of $100 or $300 delta in the price of gold, you can get a situation where you can either buy for cents on the dollar versus the peak market cap. And you see why I get excited about this business strategy that we've implemented with gold mining. And Frank, it would be one thing if I said all of this and we were just kind of talking about it as a page out of a page book in a, you know, business school kind of class or something. But we now have a 7-year track record as a public company that year in and year out has been making bear market acquisitions. And you look at our share price performance since IPO in 2011. We're up over 160%, and the benchmark being the TSX Venture, where most small mining or resource companies are listed, is down 60%. Even the GDXJ during the same time frame since 2011 is down 70%. So I think you have evidence that shows, look, after a long period of time, this business strategy of buying resource stage gold projects where you have a known resource in the ground that has been independently verified, and buying it during a bear market for a fraction of the valuation these things were worth just a few years prior or 5 years prior at a better market, this generates return, it generates value, and we love it. And in a way, I love it when there continues to be weakness in the market, because it continues to give us the opportunities that we can take advantage of.
Now, it is incredible, too. And I want to say I covered you for most of those years, at least almost 5 years now that I covered you. And the success has been amazing. But so recently I recommended your stock in a newsletter, and this is probably about 9 months ago, right? So the whole gold market, a lot of stocks have come down. Now, to me, we recommended your stock. And since we recommended your stock, it's trading lower despite you adding, I want to say, at least 8 million new ounces of gold to that portfolio through acquisitions. And I'm not just talking about the stock price, because you got to talk about dilution. I'm talking about your market cap. So your market cap has not really reflected it and is down But yet you added so much to your portfolio in terms of gold ounces, which is exactly what you said you were going to do, and you're doing amazing. So my question to you is, how do you get the market to recognize this value? Is it just where, you know, the entire market is just, you know, depressed and it's terrible? And again, we know a lot of junior mining companies that have terrible properties, have just, you know, that are doing the wrong thing. I understand those are down, but here you have a company where you're doing everything correct. You're adding, you're building your portfolio, but you're not really seeing reflected in your stock price. And even when counted for dilution and your market cap, how do you recognize that value going forward? Is it drilling? Is it, you know, more studies? Because when the value is recognized, like you said, when you look at the stock, when the gold price is down just a little bit, the value of this company is absolutely incredible when I see it. But I can also understand how shareholders could be a little frustrated because the stock has been down along with the rest of the industry.
I hear you, and I think to some extent, it's about sticking to your knitting and not allowing some of the kind of market dynamics to distract from the intrinsic value and the fundamental side of things. And what I mean by that, Frank, is at the end of the day, you're absolutely right in the sense that year to date, the intrinsic value of this company has gone up significantly because we've made two new acquisitions, both of which were projects that are, again, resource stage. One of them that we acquired in Canada, a great jurisdiction, it was even a feasibility stage project. So in fact, one of the most advanced projects we've ever acquired in our portfolio was added just recently. I mean, the deal closed just in July. And so the intrinsic value has gone up. And when we make an acquisition for stock, we are looking at the implied valuation in our own company, our own market cap, for an ounce in the ground that we own. So if the implied value for an ounce in the ground that we have is, let's say, $10 an ounce or $9 an ounce, our own ounces, and we're buying new resource ounces for a fraction of that, be it $2 or $3 or $4 an ounce in the ground, then it's accretive on a per share basis. We're adding more value on a per share basis than potential dilution. And that always creates value in the long term, reflected in the market. So my point is that I look back at 2012 and 13, all the way up till late 2015, Frank. Between that time frame, it was challenging. Even our own share price was just consolidating quietly around 75 cents a share, yet we kept doing deals. You saw what happened last year, Frank. We went from 75 cents a share to as high as $3.50 a share. And when we even came out to raise money at, at 250 or whatever it was, I looked back and at the time we thought, geez, we're giving it away. This is too low. You know, the stock had been so high and it was such an amazing performer. I mean, we were up over 400% last year. Those are incredible returns. But my point is that doesn't happen, you know, every year. And sometimes the market breathes and consolidates. And I think right now the thing I'm most focused on is making sure we keep adding to the portfolio. We keep increasing that intrinsic value, the fundamental value in the company. We've clearly done that. And we've demonstrated, again, that ongoing ability to execute. And I think sooner or later, the market, like it did last year, will recognize the value and it will reflect that value. And last year we saw it, and what triggered it was obviously improved sentiment in the gold price and investors looking for quality companies with size. Because remember, in mining, size matters. And 99% of companies at our stage of development, 99% of them don't have as many resource ounces in the ground as we do. So when size matters, which it does in mining, and when sentiment improves, we're now positioned better than ever before in our seven-year history to provide that uplift and leverage to our shareholders. So I think for us, Frank, it's about sticking to the knitting. I think the market, when it does come around, will do what it did last year, and it will recognize the sheer size of this, and I think we will we'll all be very happy with that. But sometimes you got to be patient, and you've seen it year to date. Investors have been reluctant to jump in and back into gold, not necessarily sure if this is ready for ultimate takeoff. I'm sure, and frankly, I don't care if ultimate takeoff or the gold price comes this year or next year or the year after that, but general investor sentiment, I think, has been a bit mixed. You know that, and you have your finger right on the pulse of that.
You know, I want you to, because you brought up a lot of good points before we really go to the valuation, how cheap your stock actually is based on ounces in the ground. when you created this company, even over the past few years when we talked, I mean, you had one goal in mind. Look, buy assets for penny on the dollar. Why? Because you know that the majors were in big trouble. Everybody knew, right? And they significantly underinvested to the point where they're worried about their balance sheets. They worried about – some of them worried about bankruptcy. It was that bad for them. To the point where they didn't invest in any new projects. Could you talk about that a little bit? Because I think that is such a huge focus for your company and even a few others where the majors have to go out there and find new projects, right?
Yeah, and that's the other sort of, let's say, certainty that we have in the mining business. There's two certainties. One we already covered, which is the fact that it's a cyclical business. The other certainty is that when we end up in bear markets for commodities, the major producers of those commodities, the big gorillas, the multi-billion dollar companies, cut exploration spending. They do it because they have to, because they've got shrinking margins. And with shrinking margins, you don't focus on building your pipeline for the future. You just hang on to what you have. You maintain better balance sheets. You have to focus on reducing debt or making sure you don't have too much debt. So as a result, there's total underinvestment in exploration to come up with new resources, which in mining is the pipeline for the future. In mining, resources are like your inventory. It's like going to Walmart and not having any products up on the shelves. That's what resources are in the mining business, because that's the product you ultimately mine. And right now, what is remarkable is that we are at a decade low when it comes to the gold industry's known or proven resources or reserves. So the shelves are empty. You know, it is absolutely remarkable, because we had a prolonged bear market. We had a long drought. And so what we also noticed was to focus on that certainty, knowing full well that if we can go out there without any debt on our balance sheet, with good financial backers like Brazil Invest, that Brazilian bank that I talked about, and people like Rick Rule of Sprott Asset Management, people like Marin Katusa and Doug Casey and their KCR fund. It has been about aligning yourself with big long-term investors. That gives you a bit of financial muscle to buy those resources at a time when the majors don't want them, market's not interested, and so you pick up the product that eventually the industry is going to need as it goes to restock the shelves, so to speak. But Frank, to come back to your point, we're now starting to see M&A pick up in the sector. You know, just yesterday there was a mid-tier gold company trying to pick up another one, and you've seen the majors take these toehold positions and variety of different juniors that want to drill. And so you definitely start to see that with gold prices improving, even a tad bit. Look, we're not in any kind of bull market yet here for gold. $1,300 in my mind is nothing to write home about. But you're starting to see that even at $1,300, there is this sense of they need to come back and they need to invest in the pipeline. That's only at $1,300. Now, can you imagine what happens as gold prices go up and we get margin expansion for these producers and these majors, and the resources are at a decade low, the shelves are empty, and surely there has to be even more of an aggressive move into exploration, acquiring resources in the ground. And that's exactly, again, what we are building for. We're building this very large resource base with gold resources in the ground that it can be, you know, look, it's trading. We're trading right now at, what, $8 an ounce in the ground. That is remarkable, because even when you look at historic levels for gold resources in the ground in terms of M&A multiples, mergers and acquisitions that have been done over the last 6 or 7 years, have been done for $70 an ounce on the ground and higher. This is based on reports by Royal Bank of Canada and others. So there's a lot of data that you can look at to understand and get your head wrapped around valuations in this business.
Yeah, it is incredible. I was going to ask you actually to cover that. Could you explain, say, the people who are not really in the gold industry, how much 18, 19 million ounces of gold, and that's included in measured, indicated, inferred all together, but explain how much that actually is, because, you know, for some people out there might say, oh, you know, they have a lot of gold, but just could you put it in terms for us just to show? And I don't want to sound like ultra bullish here, but I don't think I know of another company, especially even mid-tier or especially juniors, that have anywhere close to that.
No, this is all a matter of fact, because everything out there nowadays, as you know, can be investment bankers and analysts, everyone puts together these tables where you compare the size of different gold companies in terms of their resources in the ground. And we see these tables all the time. We have our own. And the bottom line is we are absolutely in the 1% club. I mean, we are part of the 1% of gold companies out there that are pre-production. So again, when it comes to gold exploration and mining, you have very early stage companies that are doing drilling and they're hoping to find a resource. And so that's the speculative side of the spectrum. Then you have companies that are at the stage that we're at, where a resource, a 43-101 compliant resource, has been identified. So that means tens of millions of dollars has gone into the project. Some exploration risk has been taken out. And the project hasn't been built yet. It has, hasn't gone through the feasibility studies to become a construction-ready project. But you know the gold resources and the mineral content, and you can evaluate that. And then you have companies that are actually producing the gold. So when you look at the companies that are in the middle of that spectrum where we are, where you have, I mean, forget about tens of millions, but we've had hundreds of millions of dollars that has been spent in our projects that we own today on drilling, on engineering studies. I mean, we have one project that historically was taken through to feasibility. We have two projects that historically were taken through preliminary economic assessment. So when you look at it as a pipeline, there's a great pipeline of projects from very advanced to resource stage in our portfolio. You add up all those resources and you're in the 1% club, and by a wide margin. And what I mean is that majority of pre-production resource stage gold companies wouldn't even have 10 million ounces of gold. You know, it'd be hard pressed to see them have 5 million ounces of gold, yet alone over 20 million ounces. Now, a big part of our focus, Frank, has been for the last couple of years to buy gold projects that also have copper byproduct or copper mineralization occurring with the gold. So these are called gold copper porphyries. And, you know, in retrospect, that was also a very timely situation because the copper resources that we've acquired are just under 2 billion pounds of copper. You know, that's billion with a B. And Frank, when we were making those acquisitions, copper prices were south of $2.50 a pound. Copper prices are now north of $3 per pound. So again, it increases and enhances the inherent value of those gold projects that have the significant copper credit with them as well. And you look at what's going on in the copper market right now with these electric vehicles and the growing demand for copper. It's remarkable. I mean, copper demand could double in the coming decade or longer. And that for that, if that happens, there just isn't enough new mines and deposits to satisfy that. So I'm also really bullish about how we're positioned with our gold resources, but also have the significant copper byproduct. Coming back to your question, so it's very rare to have this size of portfolio in terms of gold resources on the ground. And because it is so large, inherently, when the market is down like it is right now a bit for gold, we see the multiple on our ounces somewhat contract. So we're trading at about $8 an ounce in the ground for the total resources that we have. But that sheer size, like I said, is really unparalleled. And it's last year, when gold was and gold sentiment was a bit better, Frank, you saw it, we were trading at over $30 an ounce in the ground. And today we have arguably 35% more ounces in the ground, better balance sheet, and the stronger copper price, all in our favor. But yet it's attractive when you consider we're trading at one-fourth of the valuation compared to just 9 months ago.
Now, what is the catalyst over the next 6 to 12 months for investors? Because is it, say, you know, because a new investor may be looking at it, past investors who maybe want to add to their positions here, maybe say, okay, you know, is this based on gold going higher because I could just buy an ETF or I could just buy any gold company and it's going to go higher if gold prices go to 1500, 1700, 1900, you know, test those levels again, those highs. But what are the catalysts here for you? Because I know that you have $16 million in cash, no debt in your balance sheet. Is it purchasing more assets? Is it you know, building up that portfolio even more, especially in Colombia, which you just made a couple of amazing purchases at dirt cheap prices in the middle of, you know, an amazing gold district? Or is it let's figure out how much gold is on these properties and maybe drill a little bit, which also costs money. I mean, what's the catalyst investors could look forward to in the next 6 months other than, hey, you know what, I think gold prices are going higher?
Well, I mean, look, obviously, any investor looking at investing in gold. I mean, most of the guys we talk to, I mean, everyone has a different view on how to play this, right? There's individuals that look at the physical. Some people just like the ETFs. I mean, there's obviously different tastes and strategies out there. I think for us, it's about understanding a few different strategies and also a different set of characteristics that we have, which I believe is very unique to us in the sense that in the context of the strategy being one of focused on acquisitions and continuing to grow through acquisitions, not diluting at the bottom of the cycle by spending money, taking dollars and putting it in the ground. It's cheaper right now to buy projects where drilling has been done, and you can buy that for cents on the dollar. That strategy to me, if you like that strategy, we're the only company that for 7 years, year in and year out, has been executing on that strategy. And in fact, I mean, there have been other companies that have focused on that maybe for 1 or 2 years, and then they've transitioned into drilling and development. For us, we've been very much focused on the consolidation and aggregation strategy for 7 years now, year in and year out. So if you like that concept, if you like this last acquisition we just did, which is the perfect case study for our type of deal, Frank, the project that we just bought in Canada called the Yellowknife Project had $60 million, 60, worth of drilling and engineering study and equipment gone into it. Company goes into hardship back in 2013-14, ends up in receivership. We buy it out of receivership for $6 million. $6 million for something that had $60 million poured into it just over the last few years. Why would you go spend money drilling and developing when you can buy these things for a fraction of the replacement cost of the work done? That strategy sounds easy, right? It sounds easy. Hey, everyone should be doing that. But it takes a team that understands that. It takes a team that develops a track record in that. And it needs financial backers that really want to back that team to make this a reality. We're not just saying we can find and do these types of deals. But again, we have a 7-year track record that we've been executing, and we've brought in the right backers, the investors that I mentioned, to support this. So I think that's number one. You have to like the strategy, and you have to recognize that the team's been doing it and generating results. The leverage is unparalleled. Just look at the chart. Look at the chart last year. Why would you buy GDXJ? I mean, you could buy GDXJ, but GDXJ, for the record, was up, what, 180% last year? We were up over 300%. So in my mind, the way this is structured and the leverage to the amount of ounce gold resources that we have, I'm not arguing us over GDXJ, but what I'm saying is in terms of leverage, if someone just purely wants leverage, just look at the chart last year. I think you can see the performance was remarkable, and we were the second best performing gold mining stock on the TSX Venture last year. We made this TSX 50 list, Frank, and the only stock that performed better than we did wasn't a gold stock. It was a lithium stock, okay? And lastly, I would say you got to look at management and insiders. Are they aligned? Insiders in gold mining own 25% of the company. When it was difficult to raise money, we were the first people to write a check and put money in this company. The capital structure and who owns the shares matter when you invest in small cap stocks. You know that. And the more tightly held it is, the more insiders own, the more insiders are truly driven to increase equity value because of their own skin in the game and how thick that skin is, the more it can increase value. And I think here you see a situation where you don't often come across small companies or small gold companies. When I say small, I'm talking about small market cap. I mean, our market cap is still just about $200 million. Technically, we're a small cap. But for insiders to own 25%, that is thick skin in the game. And that characteristic, combined with our strategy, combined with just looking at the kind of leverage and performance we can have in a better gold market, as evidenced by last year, all those things combined, I think, are reasons to consider why this is a unique way to play the gold market through gold mining. And the ticker is symbol, Frank. We got lucky last year, as you know, when we got the ticker symbol gold in Canada.
Which is pretty interesting. I mean, that was we talked about that too, which is surprising, right? Because they had a big change and you're able to, restructure, get another symbol and stuff like that. But that was pretty amazing that you got GOLD, which I know probably there was 100 companies that probably put in for that symbol, if I had to guess, right?
Well, sometimes you got to get lucky. And that was, everything everything I just mentioned to you right now was all about design and strategy and execution, and the how it played out for us to get the ticker symbol GOLD, G-O-L-D, was pure luck, because like you said, many companies applied to get that last year when Canada or the Canadian exchange introduced four-letter stock symbols for the first time ever. And it was just a fun thing to get. I mean, that's obviously a nice cherry on top, I guess, especially when you build such an extensive gold portfolio. Hey, not to be confused with the ticker symbol GOLD on the NASDAQ, which is a big company called RAND Gold. That's a $90 share price. That's definitely not us. I mean, we aspire to become RAND Gold one day, but right now our ticker symbol in the U.S., not to be confused, is GLDLF. And the gold ticker symbol is only in Canada.
So, Amir, we got a couple minutes left here, and you are speaking at the Robin Redshirt Conference. I think you might have spoken already, and then you're actually speaking again. So you're doing this right in the middle for us. But your other company that you know, you see of uranium energy, and a lot of times when I have you on, people say, you know, Frank, could you talk about uranium energy? It's a company we hold, and yeah, it's been performing well off its lows. It has come down a little bit, but maybe give us a quick update on that, because I know even today you had news released on it. So let's talk about, you know, the last 5 minutes on uranium energy, maybe uranium, because so many of my listeners love uranium. They're in a lot of uranium stocks because they think it's dirt cheap. I agree with them, and I think it's going to be a lot higher if you just close your eyes and open them 5 years from now. So why don't you talk about it as someone who's really, really deep into this industry?
Yeah, well, first of all, we've talked about it on the show. You're right. I mean, I hate to do this in 5 minutes because it's absolutely impossible to talk about everything we need to talk about on uranium and UEC in 5 minutes. And but despite that, I'll do my best, Frank. I mean, look, at the end of the day, I was just speaking about being countercyclical and contrarian when it comes to gold investing and how gold mining has been built. Uranium is like the ultra case for what it takes to be a contrarian. I mean, you know, the gold prices are down, but they're not. And uranium, it's really bad. The uranium price is at a 13-year low, at $20 per pound, where the uranium price is. Not a single uranium mine on the planet, can make money at this price. So, you know, gold prices are not that bad, right? Gold prices are down, but a lot of mines are still making money. So uranium is an ultra bearish situation. And it's one of those things, like I was giving a talk at to a group of investors actually last week in Washington D.C. I was there for some meetings, and I almost wanted to title my talk "The Most Despised Investment in America," because it just feels that way. But you know, Frank, there's just so many things that I look at that blow my mind in terms of being the positives in it. And why I say it's contrarian, because the contrarian situation is that you see ultra bearish views right in front of you, but great fundamentals long term. So when you look at the long term fundamentals, in the U.S. today we have a new administration that truly recognizes the benefits of nuclear power. Just look at the grid reliability study that the Department of Energy put out in late August that concluded we need base load nuclear power in order to have a reliable energy grid. And Frank, it was almost like some kind of act of God. A week later from when that study came out, when Hurricane Harvey hit South Texas, every form of energy generation was shut down. Pipelines were bursting. The wind turbines couldn't operate at that kind of rate with the winds coming. Everything was shut down except for the two nuclear power plants in South Texas that kept operating safely throughout all of that and provided electricity to 2 million homes. That's what the grid reliability report talked about. It said we can't put all of our eggs in one basket, be it natural gas, generated electricity, or wind or solar. So the nuclear power plants in the U.S. are the backbone of the electricity grid. They're consuming 50 million pounds of uranium annually. But domestic production of uranium is only 2 million pounds. 95% of uranium needed in the U.S. is being imported from places like Russia. I mean, this is mind-boggling. I had the opportunity to sit down with Energy Secretary Rick Perry. I sat down with him at the Department of Energy late July. And talked about this. And remember, we know him very well because UEC is a Corpus Christi-based company for most of the last decade when we were operating in Texas, he was the governor of the state. I met with Scott Pruitt, the head of the EPA, the new EPA administrator, also during the same trip. And Frank, as we explain these points to them, they come to the same conclusions that we do, which is it's a matter of national security, national energy issues, and jobs. Thousands of jobs could be created and have been lost as a result of uranium mining really being cut back in the U.S. So to begin with, I think there's a really increasing heartbeat here for the idea of U.S. uranium having a resurgence. Actually, at this Rotman conference yesterday, I met with Sean Spicer, and we had a great chat for half an hour about all of this. And Frank, at the end of it, he asked to come down and take a tour of our South Texas operations that you've been to at Hobson and Palangana. So I'm actually following up with him. I'll take Sean down there with me. You might want to come on that trip. Me, you, and Sean Spicer down at down in South Texas looking at uranium mines. But the point is, after 8 years of a difficult time under the Obama administration on nuclear power in the U.S., getting no recognition, now there's a growing recognition and importance. And worldwide, there are more nuclear reactors under construction than any other time in history. So is that bearish to you or bullish? I mean, to me, that's bullish. So why the hell is the uranium price at a 13-year low? Because the Japanese reactors took so long to come back online. But they're coming. Five reactors in Japan are back online. The Japanese were selling their inventories, and that caused an oversupply in the market. But the reactors are coming back online. And the biggest company in the uranium mining business, the Kazakh company, Kazatomprom, Frank, just announced last week they want to go public next year. So guess what? They want to see more cuts. They want to see a higher uranium price because that's going to also help with their IPO. So now they're very much aligned with the rest of us. So I see a lot of positive dynamics despite the ultra bearish sentiment and environment. And with UEC, the news that you referred to that I put out today, I'm sorry, I have to deviate. It had nothing to do with uranium. As you saw, it has to do with a titanium deposit that we acquired, again, opportunistically a year and a half ago in Paraguay because we happen to have uranium projects in Paraguay. We've been in Paraguay for 5 years. We saw an incredible opportunity at when the titanium market crashed a year and a half ago to buy what is the world's largest titanium deposit. We announced it this morning. And our goal is to ultimately sell and monetize this for the benefit of UEC shareholders. We're not going to change our focus from a uranium to titanium. But Frank, I think this will be a significant deposit, significant asset. Hence, monetizing it could become a really important boost for UEC. And we'll see how that plays out. But that news is on the tape this morning. Suffice to say, in between meeting Sean Spicer yesterday and chatting with him and presenting two companies and lots of one-on-one meetings and the press release, I'm just really happy that you and I connected to do this interview because there's a lot going on here.
No, and I really appreciate it, Amir. I know that you're in the middle of a lot of things, and you said, hey, you know what? I got an hour. I'll go back up to the hotel room. Actually, I had to call the hotel room and give them your room number, which don't worry. I'm not going to give it online. So everybody's calling you. But I really appreciate you taking the time, and I know my my subscribers do as well as some of my listeners. But so thanks so much for the update, and we'll talk soon. Okay, buddy?
Yeah, really looking forward to it, Frank. And all the best in getting things back together with your house and getting electricity back on and cleaning up things and helping out the neighborhood and thinking of you as you do that. And thanks for having me on again.
All right, man. I appreciate that. I'll talk to you soon. Hey, guys. Great stuff from Amir. And look, I love Amir. He's a close friend that was there for me a lot during good times and bad times. In Vancouver a few months ago, that was at the Sprott Resource Conference. I mean, he hosted a dinner for UEC. It's probably 100, 150 people or so there. Really nice place. And brought me up in front of the whole audience. Talk about the market, sports, the economy, Bitcoin, everything outside of mining since it was like the last day, like the last night of the conference. And we were kind of all mined out a little bit. But he decided to do this on the fly and said, hey, you know, brought me up there with him and said, you know, this podcast, Wall Street Unplugged, is one of the best sources for everyone. If you're not listening to it, you should listen to it. It's great. It's one of the only things out there I listen to, you know, every single week. It's an amazing source. And he's been a close friend. But I want to be clear here. It's not why I'm recommending gold mining. I mean, this podcast is about making money. I have a lot of friends who are CEOs that I won't put on this podcast, whether I think their stock is expensive or, you know, maybe I just don't like their company, what they're doing, or see a long-term outlook on that. So, you know, I want you guys to be very clear of that. But Amir has most of his wealth tied into this company. It's his life. He's a huge owner, fact, insiders own 25%, like you mentioned. Each one of his projects already have infrastructure in place, and tens of millions of dollars have already been put into these projects before, you know, they even bought them, in terms of infrastructure development, all kinds of drilling. Look at 19 million ounces of gold in the ground being valued at $8 when the going rate is $70. It is based on past acquisitions since 2012. Again, in a bear market, I'm not just sugarcoating that estimate. There's an estimate where it's been over $100 per ounce in the ground that have been purchased, and some that have been a little bit cheaper than that. But even, say, on a conservative level, we cut in half to 35, you're looking at over 300% gains on the stock here, which is why I like the name so much. They also have $16 million cash, no debt, so fully funded, right, to do even more acquisitions, and right in a sweet spot to get purchased by a major who are in dire need to add gold ounces to their portfolio. And a lot of these companies only have like a million here, 2 million, some of them are high grade. I mean, you're getting this whole entire portfolio, which is massive. They could also probably spin off a lot of these projects if they wanted to into individual companies. So again, not highlighting it, not pumping the stock, but at these levels, again, if it goes down, what's going to happen? Well, you guys aren't going to listen to the podcast. You're not going to subscribe to my stuff anymore. I mean, my only intention is to bring you really good ideas. This is an idea we've had Amir on plenty of times. We've had him on very early where people bought in, but I did recommend this stock, which I pointed out right away during that interview, at a higher price, and it is down. But you could see why I recommend it at these levels and why I see so much upside potential, especially with gold prices coming back. This is a very, very good name, and I think you guys, well, at least one day, you'll thank me for it, because it has a lot of upside. At least I believe so. On another note, I've seen Amir operate in all kinds of circles. I mean, I'm talking about conferences, special events where the world's largest politicians, or, you know, when I say largest, the biggest, most famous politicians and billionaires attend. And the respect he commands is unbelievable. And I've never really told him this, to be honest with you. And hopefully he doesn't listen to this, but at least this episode. But he talked about his meetings with Rick Perry, Secretary of Energy, Sean Spicer, which, yeah, again, whether you like him or not, still a big name. Mario Guerrero is a director and big investor in gold mining. He's one of the richest people in the world, richest in Brazil, I believe. One of the most influential people in all of South America. Read his profile on the internet. You'll be amazed. He's not like one of those billionaires that just hates the world. What he's done for Brazil is unbelievable. He's a pioneer. He's incredible. What he's done for that economy. And here's a guy, and you know, you look at this and say, you know, just some of the, even Li Keqing is one of the richest people in Asia. I mean, look up his wealth. Was it $35 billion or something like that, I believe? Don't quote me on that, but it's close. I mean, he's a shareholder of UEC. Spencer Abraham, who I was able to meet personally, is the former Secretary of Energy. Great guy. And these are people who invest in Amir. And believe me, these guys don't invest in anyone. Only guys that have a ton of respect for. So when I see this and I see these names and I see that circle, I mean, these are people that believe in somebody. And that's why, you know, I like having him on. He's done a lot for me. Again, it's not about, you know, a friend here. It's about recommending a stock that I believe is incredibly cheap based on valuation. And in a bear market, right? Single bear, it's been terrible for junior miners outside of a little, I wouldn't say a little. We generated huge returns in you know, early 2016. But pretty much since the middle of 2016 till now, it's been really crappy for junior miners, especially since Trump got elected, which is a surprise. But you look at the gold prices come back, this company's well positioned. Again, you know, this is a company I think that does have incredible upside potential. And if gold prices crash from here, you know, again, want to tell both sides of the story, this stock's going to get nailed. But if we hold 1200, it happens to go higher, I think this is a stock that should be trading at least 300% higher from here. And I hope it does, because I know a lot of you own it. And that's what I'd love to see, you know, you guys making money. Now, real quick educational segment here. I'm seeing expensive valuations across the board, right? I think we all pretty much all agree with that, where the market is trading, I think, 17 times, 18 times forward earnings. We are growing earnings by 10%, which justifies this valuation for now. Okay, it's a big deal, growing double digits. We weren't growing at all like, you know, a year ago. I mean, it was terrible. So we're coming off what we would say easy comps. Hopefully I said, you know, but anyway, we're growing earnings pretty fast. But outside of a few large cap tech names, you're looking at, you know, you guys know Fang, which is Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google, you know, Amazon, and Apple, both the A in that. The underlying market is probably more volatile I've seen today than it's been since the credit crisis, where you're seeing stocks that report weak earnings, instead of falling by 10%, they're falling by like 40%. I don't know if it's algorithms or what's pushing these things down, but it's creating a huge opportunity right now for patient investors. And Incursio Venture Opportunities, which is an aggressive newsletter, right? We're looking to hit grand slams, not just home runs, but grand slams. We took advantage of this trend. Was able to you know, recommend a biotech name And I used to follow this biotech name. It fell 70% in 4 months. To be fair, they did report bad news on a signature drug. The stock should have fallen maybe 25%, maybe. Instead, it fell 70%. So we picked up 3 weeks ago, reported great news on a follow-up study, and the stock surged 150% in 3 days. So we're up like 180%, which we sold half the position. The stock has fallen off a little bit off of those levels, but still, we're in a no risk, you know, a perfect investment. You know, placing a stop on the second half position, we're easily going to lock in, you know, triple digit gains, big triple digit gains, you know, in 3 weeks time. Now, you guys know I break down my losers all the time, so I'm not bragging about this winner. It's more about the educational segment and bringing up a point here, because we saw the same thing with Hertz, which fell from $40 a share to $9. I think it was over $50 a share one time, Hertz. And I told you it was a steal at those levels, even though, you know, again, we know the risks to the rental car market. But at $9, their assets are worth like twice what the company was trading at. And it's $23 a share now in 2 months. You saw Teva, which happened to be a big loser for me where we stopped out. I mean, recently Pop, after selling one of its brands for a little bit over $1 billion, a brand I'm sure I knew about, but few analysts probably even knew they owned. They also finally hired a CEO, but the stock went from 15 to 20 in a few days, close to 30% gains. Again, a stock that got destroyed. I'm sure we're going to see the same thing with GE if the CEO, who's expected to announce his major, you know, future strategy of GE for the next few years. But if CEO comes out there and announces they're selling a few divisions at this level where the whole entire world hates GE, the stock could pop 15% in a day from these levels. And that's paying like a 4% yield right now. Chicago Bridge and Iron's another one that I mentioned. I reported several terrible quarters. If you look at this company, where horrible. And then they announced that they're suspending their dividend. So the stock fell from over $30 a share in January, just in January, to just under $10. For me, this is a company I covered a long time ago. Infrastructure name, natural gas infrastructure, building LNG facilities and stuff like that. But I couldn't believe how big this sell-off, since, you know, they're cutting the dividend, which what pushes the stock down right away. You're getting funds, they have to immediately sell it. But you have to realize it's good news for a stock. KMI did the same thing and got destroyed. You know, able to pick that one up, you know, personally, and it did incredibly well on it. And I mentioned that stock to you as well. But when they cancel a dividend, wait for that massive sell-off, because it's saving a ton of money that they're not paying out. So you're looking at mid-August for Chicago Bridge and Iron. This is a few weeks ago, trading at 10. It's 15 now. I mean, so you're looking at a 50% gain in just a few weeks. Massive, massive gains. Now, for you individual investors, I'm going to get to the question that you're thinking right now. So don't email me in at frankcurzyresearch.com. I'm getting to it. If you see a stock fall by 30% plus, keep it on your radar. Find out why it sold off so much. Is the bad news temporary? Maybe they're going to generate sales in the second half of the year. Maybe some of those orders got pushed out, like Diebold announced. That's why I went to pick it up at the $21 level, which I love. Incredible catalyst going forward. Is it a biotech where the FDA is just asking for more data? So they're not shutting down the whole program. They didn't report horrible data. The FDA is saying, listen, we need a little bit more of this. Because you'll see a stock like that, report something like that in the biotech area, fall by 40, 50%. If they report that positive data, okay, you're looking at a stock that can go from 20 to 10, then go easily to 17 if that data is positive again. Or just getting back to the same level where the FDA is saying, okay, now this data is okay. You can go to the next phase. You're going to get amazing opportunities to buy these stocks at almost no risk prices when they get crushed. But here's the thing, the question I'm getting to. You don't want to try to catch a falling knife. And we can bring Teva as a good example. Well, I thought it was a strong buy at 19 and it fell to 15. I thought it was a strong buy. Now it's 20. I was kind of right, you know, a little bit. But still, you know, sometimes you don't want to catch a falling knife. So how can you use this strategy where you're not buying a stock that's falling off a cliff and you know, may continue to do so? Because we see that a lot, right? Because companies, we know one thing about companies. They always exceed far to the upside, much further than anyone believes, and also to the downside. They fall a lot further than what everyone believes. That's what happens with stocks. It's just normal. Not about valuation, more about sentiment, more about feelings, people just selling and asking questions later. So how do you avoid that? How do you avoid catch that? Well, one thing I look for is insider buys. I mean, are you seeing a 30, 40% sell-off and the insiders are immediately buying? That's a pretty good sign. With the smartest guys in the world, the smartest guys in that company, are buying that stock and adding to their positions, especially if they're already owners. So I preferably like to look for insider buys from the CEO. Also look to see if some major hedge funds are buying the stock. And the 13Fs, they're released every quarter. That's what led me to this situation. I was familiar with it, this biotech name that went up 180%. But there's two biotech companies, biotech funds that I respect a ton. And they both initiated positions. But for the first time, they bought this company on a 70% sell-off, which is what led me to dig even more and do more research. And that led me to the game. So look at the 13Fs, which are published every quarter, and see if the big name hedge funds are purchasing some stock that's down 30, 40%. It's usually a good sign because they're not looking for a 10, 15% increase in the stock and get out. They're probably going to add to their position over time, which creates that floor and that buying that you want to see. This way the stock just doesn't fall out of favor. And also look at the technicals, right? We don't talk about technicals a lot, but they're important. If the stock is holding a certain level, you could place a stop slightly below that level. So if it breaks, you're going to take a small loss on the stock. But if it holds, you can see one of these names pop 25, 50% or more just in a few weeks following those massive sell-offs. Again, where investors are just selling these names on bad news and asking questions later. So maybe it's algorithms or whatever. But the amount, the percentage of sell-offs where I'm seeing a stock miss earnings estimate now fall 10%. Yeah, like they should fall 10, 12%, 15%. They're falling 40, 50% that are coming on my I've never seen opportunities like this for such short-term gains. Is it risky? Yes. You buy a Teva and then, fall a little bit and you get stopped out. But 180% gain in 3 weeks doesn't get better than that. I'm not talking options either. And it's insane. So use this crazy volatility to your advantage. Because in a market that's trading near 10-year highs based on valuation, mostly because a few names I just keeping this market higher. I have to tell you, for the first time in a long time, I'm finding incredible, incredible opportunities where the risk is not that great since these stocks are already down 30, 40% plus, but the upside is incredible. I am more than 50% upside, and you're not going to have to wait long for these gains. It's mostly taking place in just a few months' time. And remember, these companies, it's not about them in a couple of weeks. This is important, real quick before I end this. It's the most important lesson I could teach you maybe ever in history. Here it comes. Ready? The biggest gains are made from when the stock goes from less bad to bad. It's not when things get great because a lot of the stock movement has already taken place. Now, when you see a stock sell off from 20 to 5, the only thing that company has to do is show some kind of stabilization. So it has to go from bad to less bad. They don't have to create a cure for cancer. They don't have to create anything crazy. Business is suddenly great after our 70, 80%, 90% pullback. They just have to show stabilization. Once they do, you'll see that stock pop 20, 30, 40% immediately. That's where the biggest gains in stocks are made, from when it goes from 5 to 10. Yes, it can go from 10 to 20. It's a nice 100% gain. But if you own it from 5 to 20, you're a superstar. That's where the biggest gains are made. So even though things are going to look bleak and they're terrible, you don't need this company to come out and blow out earnings. They just need to meet earnings estimates. Just stop the bleeding and you'll see these stocks. Trust me, I've covered small caps for over 20 years. You'll see these stocks pop 20, 30, 40%. It's where I've made the biggest gains in this sector. I don't even know. Maybe I should have a whole educational segment on that. But it's kind of weird when you think about it. You want to buy these great companies with cash flow. You read all these amazing books, right? Buffett's books and Peter Lynch, buy companies with cash. You're buying those companies. A lot of the greatness is factored into those stocks. When you're buying a crappy, horrible company that with no good news, the stock's down 80%, believe me, all they need to do is control the damage. Just report an inline quarter, and you'll have no idea why that stock's up 20% because it's just completely oversold, and you're going to get investors back into a company, and you're going to get the value guys looking at a company that's down 70%. That's what they do. So you're losing the growth crowd. Everyone's gone, but now you get the value investors saying, wow, this is like a steal here. This stock should be worth double the price right now. It's way oversold. One of the keys to making a lot of money and a lot of money in small caps, including, again, it's nice to mention a nice 180% gain, not for me, not to pat myself on the back, but for the subscribers that own that stock, because now they're doing well. They're fantastic. Our performance is killing it now in that newsletter, and the performance is going to be killing it soon. Encourage your research advisor. You have my word. A lot of great recommendations coming up. Seen a lot of great ideas for that newsletter as well. So guys, that's it for me. Thanks so much again for all your concerns. I know I said that 10 times. I should be saying it 20 or 30 times. And really, I love all of you. I really do. Really some great emails. And I'll definitely see you guys in 7 days. Take care.
The information presented on Wall Street Unplugged is the opinion of its hosts and guests. You should not base your investment decisions solely on this broadcast. Remember, it's your money and your responsibility. Wall Street Unplugged, produced by the Choose Yourself Podcast Network, the leader in podcasts produced to help you choose yourself.